From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Turkish and Russian troops conducted their first joint patrol in the city of Kobani near the Turkish-Syrian border on Tuesday. During that patrol, Russian and Turkish troops were pelted with rocks by city residents. To sift through all of this, we spoke with Mark Sloboda, international analyst based in Moscow, from Moscow via Skype on Tuesday. Okay, Mark, let's try to parse who's on which side. It's really getting hard now, looking at the situation in Syria along the Turkish border, and now this with the people who are angry with the Russians, I guess, because they're marching with the Turks. Can you help us with this?
Yeah. Okay. So, Don, thanks for having me. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be on CPR with you.
Oh, our pleasure.
So, the developments in East Syria, east of the Euphrates, have since the U.S. Trump announced on Twitter that he was withdrawing, he was finally doing it, and he's announced it before and it didn't happen, that he was withdrawing U.S. troops from Syria, at least from East Syria, and that the Turks simultaneously, because it was done right after a telephone call with Erdogan, and Erdogan was going to invade Syria again, this time in the northeast where the Americans were withdrawing, on the pretext of a security operation. Operation, oxymoronically enough, Peace Spring. I think they must be laughing as they're coming up with the name.
It's like Operation You Gotta Be Kidding Me. Yeah, right.
Yeah. The real goal here is that because the Kurds in the Syrian Democratic Forces were entirely under the U.S. Thumb, if you were. They were pretty slavish in their devotion to the U.S. And there's no way they were going to participate in any type of activity against Turkey while the Americans were there. It simply wasn't going to happen. So there wasn't really any security threat that Turkey faced from the YPG that was a part of the U.S. rebranded Syrian Democratic Forces. So what is the real reason Turkey is going in? A land grab. It's that simple. Erdogan has a neo-Ottoman belief that northern Syria and bits of western Iraq are naturally Turkish territory. In fact, there's parts of the dividing lines that were drawn up between Syria and Turkey in the post-colonial era, the post-British and Ottoman colonial era, that Turkey still doesn't recognize as part of Syria. That's Hasaka province. Uh-huh. But Turkey, Erdogan, sees the opportunity here. He didn't get the regime change in Damascus, but he can seize a whole swath of northern Syria along the Turkish border. And he intends to ethnically cleanse that area of Syrian Kurds, previously the Syrian Kurds have acted as a reservoir with which the Turkish Kurds, the PKK, the People's Workers Party, in their insurgency against what I think what everyone agrees is a repressive Turkish regime, not very respective of their rights as a minority, the Syrian Kurds on the other side border previously have acted as a reservoir from which they can operate out of and retreat back to. Now, in 1998, a deal was signed between Syria and Turkey called the Adana Agreement. And in this agreement, the Syrian government would stop supporting the Kurds, the Kurdish insurgency in Turkey, that they would keep control of the Kurds within Syria and prevent them from helping the Kurds in Turkey, and that Turkey was allowed to make limited military incursions, you know, notifying the Syrian government into northern Syria for the purpose of fighting Kurds, ostensibly the PKK or the YPG, which the Turkish government says are the same thing. But it was limited up to like 5 miles that they were allowed to pursue, and they could only be there temporarily. And Russia is using this Adana Agreement from 1998 as the blueprint to try to get Turkey to re-recognize the government in Damascus and sit down and work out a relationship between the two of them.
Right.
And Russia's idea is that a return to this document would should satisfy the Turkish security concerns about armed Kurds, in northern Syria along the border with Turkey. Now, the problem here is that this isn't solely Erdogan's goal. Most of the Syrian Kurds live along this 30-kilometer border region, which Turkey has already taken large swaths of, all along the Turkish border in the west, and now a chunk in the east as well. He wants to ethnically cleanse the Kurds from this area, drive them out. He's already done it essentially in Afrin Canton. There's more than 100,000 displaced persons there, and by some accounts, there's already 100,000 displaced from the new Turkish incursion in the middle of East Syria. And he wants to repopulate this area, recolonize it, if you will, with, among others, the 3.6 million Syrian refugees, many of them of Sunni Islamic nature, that have fled the conflict into Turkey. Now, these Syrian refugees are a big domestic problem for Erdogan right now. The one thing that all Turks of political stripes agree on is they want the Syrian refugees gone, and they want them gone yesterday.
Right.
They feel that they are a drag, that supporting them is costing the Turkish taxpayer, right? The tax money, that it's taking jobs away from them, and Turkey has a very ailing economy right now. And that, you know, of course, wherever they are, the camps where they are, the large numbers of fighters and jihadis and the criminal networks that operate, it's a big source of crime wherever, you know, these refugee camps / fighter camps are. So he wants to resettle a good portion of these, and they're mostly Sunni Arabs, Turkmen, some Uyghurs from China and Central Asia. And all the other jihadists that have come from around the world, that some of them are still fighting, under the quote Syrian moderate rebel rubric, including several thousand from Europe, a few hundred from America, several thousand from Russia and the former Soviet Union, particularly the Caucasus and Central Asia. And he would like to resettle them, their families, and all the other refugees, that fled north with them in this border zone there. And you might be, they do need a place to live. Okay, well, that's fair enough. But putting them there where it's not their homes entails driving someone else, namely the Kurds,
right.
the Assyrians, the Syrian Christians in the area, everyone else who's already living in this area, driving them out and moving them in.
Right.
That's a demographic, major demographic change. It's ethnic cleansing. It's text.
That's right.
Well, ethnic cleansing. And that's what, and, you know, everyone at this point, I mean, Erdogan's already done it in Afrin and in the Jarablus corridor in west and central Syria, the borders he seized there. Now, when he went into east Syria after Trump announced the withdrawal, Russia and the Syrian army raced. A very tentative deal was struck with the Kurds over the very vocal objections of the U.S. The U.S. envoy to Syria, James Jeffrey, was evidently screaming at the Kurdish leader and snapping pencils in his face, saying you can't negotiate with the Russians, you can't negotiate with the Syrian government, when they're the only ones at this point who were able to protect them from the Turks, right? And the PKK, or the YPG in eastern Syria, they don't have a lot of heavy arms. The U.S. never provided that to them in an attempt to mollify Turkey. The Turkish army would be preceded by all of the rebel forces throughout this conflict, with the exception of Al-Qaeda, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the Turkestan Islamic Party, and Haras al-Din, which are still holding the fort for Turkey, as it were, in Idlib. All of the other rebel groups have now been unified in one rebranded jihadi grab bag that the Turks are now calling the, quote, Syrian National Army.
Right.
And there is supposedly 80,000 of them, 80,000 Islamists and jihadis, beholden, armed, trained, and salaried by Turkey at this point. And that is the cannon fodder that he would use to take this area. And then it's the very same that he would then set up a proxy Syrian government. He's already done it in the Jarablus corridor in Afrin, and he'll repeat it there. The Kurds won't stand a chance, particularly without American air power. They were never actually very effective as a military force. And in East Syria, where there's no mountains, where the Kurds are good at irregular guerrilla-style warfare, in East Syria there, they'd be cut to ribbons. So they need the protection of a real military. And Russia, the Syrian government and Russian forces raced into the area, trying to put up a thin line of human tripwire against encroaching Turkish presence. We had this tentative ceasefire for 120 hours that was worked out between Trump and Erdogan after the initial incursion. And then that went right into a meeting between Putin and Erdogan in Sochi a little over a week ago, where a second deal was hammered out. And the terms of this deal are that Turkey gets to keep what they managed to grab in East Syria already, which is a 30-mile deep by 120-kilometer long stretch, basically in the middle of East Syria, east of the Euphrates, that is between two Sunni Arab majority towns, As-Salrin and Al-Tabyad. This area in between there, it was actually taken by the Pentagon-backed Kurds from the CIA-backed Free Syrian Army, which is now backed by the Turks several years ago. And it's the area of northeastern Syria that is least that the Turks would get the best welcome in, right, rather than other areas.
Gotcha.
Now, they also agreed to joint patrols outside of this area to the west and east at a 10-kilometer line between the Russians and the Turks, and that the YPG, the Kurdish YPG, the Kurdish Syrian armed Kurdish units, previously known as the Syrian Democratic Forces, had to withdraw along that whole stretch of territory 30 kilometers, which basically, and that's, again, that's the majority of the area, you know, the most populated Syrian Kurdish area. So that means that they have to rely on Russian troops patrolling with the Turks to keep them safe from both the Turkish army and, more importantly, these 80,000 Syrian and other sundry jihadists, right, and Islamists, right, in the, quote, Syrian National Army.
Right.
And sure enough, I mean, they're taping themselves executing Kurdish female political leaders, rape, murder, you know, ethnic cleansing, the whole nine yards. And in between these two towns, no one has any control. The Turks can do whatever they want. The Russians aren't even allowed to go there. The Syrian government's not allowed to go there. Everywhere else along this stretch, this so-called deal that is supposed to keep the Kurds safe, the Kurds are supposed to retreat beyond this line, and a war between Turkey and Russia is supposed to be, and between Turkey and the Syrian national, the Syrian government in Damascus is supposed to be averted. Now, in the reality on the ground, of course, is that this deal is being met about as well as the previous Russian-Turkish deal in Idlib, which is to say it's not being met at all, right? The Turks are not being met. There's skirmishing all along this line. There's towns changing hands all the time. There's still some armed Kurds in the area. The Turkish jihadis are attacking them, but they're also attacking villages and ethnic cleansing. And there's a shelling going on. It's a mess. But both Turkey and Russia are pretending right now that the deal is still working, just like they did in Idlib, because the alternative is that Turkey and Russia go to war with each other. At this time, the Kurds are still trying to keep one in bed with both the Americans and now the Russians at the same time. And Trump's deep state, the Pentagon, and at least in the argument front, it was led by Lindsey Graham, neocon senator from the Republican Party. They managed to flip Trump 180 degrees by using the magic word oil.
Right.
And the Syrian, or the U.S. troops in East Syria, together with their local proxies, the Kurds and the local Eastern Syrian Arabs tribes in the Syrian Democratic Forces, had been sitting on Syria's oil a long time now. So basically, the Americans have retreated south of the Turkish incursion zone, south of this 30-kilometer limit, and they made to turn as if they were going to Iraq. And then these neocon genius in the deep state, the blob, whatever, in the U.S. managed to convince Trump that he needed to continue to occupy Syria's oil fields because money. And they turned right around. So the majority of U.S. troops is now moving further to the south. What the final tally of American troops now in East Syria? There was supposedly only 1,000 left. Supposedly there'll be some 900 more now in the oil zone. So we may have lost 100. Although I predict at the end of the day that there will be far more American troops with this new occupation of Syria's oil fields, ostensibly to protect it from ISIS and whoever else might want to take it, meaning the Syrian government.
Right. So, yeah, right.
Protecting Syria's oil. Oil from Syrians. Now, what is the U.S. doing with this oil? There's no pipelines there. They're oil smuggling. And the Russian government has been quite clear about this and has accused the U.S. government of international banditry. The U.S. oil firm ConocoPhillips is there. There's a big Conoco field. What they're doing is they're smuggling the oil. Some of this oil is even being sold to the Syrian government, with the Syrian Democratic Forces acting as the intermediary there. That is, they're making the Syrian government buy their own oil.
Right.
And some of it's going to the Turks, some of it's going to the Turks' proxies, some of it is probably going to Iraq. But the proceeds from this are being used to run the SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces, and their U.S. proxy government, such as it still is,
right,
in eastern Syria, the extent of which is not clear, because, again, the Kurds are still trying to lie in bed with the Americans and with the Russians, and no one's clear who actually has total, you know, control and who the Kurds are now really allied with. Nothing is set in stone at this point. And the Americans, Trump even tweeted out, maybe it's time for the Kurds to move south to the oil. And that's not where the Kurds are from. In the south, where the oil fields, are local Arab tribes. And if the Kurds came there, there'd be another more fighting and ethnic cleansing going on. Trump is the troops that he's sending into the oil fields aren't trainers and special ops and drone operation forces and stuff as such as it was already in East Syria. Some of those have indeed left and gone to Iraq. And Iraq, by the way, has made very clear they don't want the American troops either there either. But they're moving actually armored mechanized units into these East Syrian oil fields, which will mean main battle tanks and other, you know, armed APCs and other units there. And basically, the U.S. is sending in a military force that is designed to be able to repel Russian troops and the Syrian army to continue to sit on the oil, use it, again, for their proxy forces local in the area. Some of it is also going, according to the Russian government, to the Pentagon and the CIA black funds, which they're doing all sorts of things out of any kind of transparency to, or accountability to Congress in the area. And that's the mess as it is. Supposedly, America still controls airspace over eastern Syria at the moment. They may be conducting patrols with the Kurds. That's what the Turks are accusing them of. No one's sure about that. The Russians have begun these joint patrols with the Turks. Again, there's this very intricate game going on. The Turkish forces are not allowed to attack Russian forces, and Russian forces are not allowed to attack Turkish forces. The Turkish proxies are allowed to attack whoever they want. Although if they attack Russian forces, they have to be very quiet. You know, it has to be very small scale.
Right.
But they can attack the Kurds and they can attack the Syrian army. The Syrian army can fight and the Russians can attack the Turkish proxies, but they can't attack the Turkish government.
Right.
Anyone who wants to, which is basically the Turks and the Turkish jihadis at this point, can attack the Kurds and no one will do anything about it.
Right.
These are the game of this, the intricate rules of this game. There is still a three-way Mexican standoff going on in East Syria. What has simply changed is that the Americans have, for the most part, moved a little bit further to the south. Some of their military bases have already been basically taken over, and some cases actually handed over to the Russians. Uh-huh. Others, they've now reoccupied, and the chatter is that they are building new air bases in East Syria by the oil fields. The problem, of course, with this completely crazy plan to occupy, sit on Syria, East Syria's oil, is logistics and supply. They would have to then control a portion of the Iraqi Syrian border, which is now supposed to be controlled by the Syrian government in Russia, in order to get supplies, gasoline, ammunition, you know, all the things that food, all the logistics, resupply, you know, replacement men, so on. So how the Americans are going to do that? Are they going to operate a continual airlift operation, which would be extremely expensive and hazardous? Are they going to claim a whole swath of Syrian territory still heading to the Iraqi border? No one knows. Are the Kurds going to reconcile with the Damascus government? Possibly. They've made some initial steps in that direction, but now they're starting to hem and haw with America reversing course and staying in the area. Right. Deconfliction between the U.S. and Russian forces, and between the U.S. and Turkish forces, and between Turkish forces and Russian forces, is a mess right now. They're all together in East Syria. They've all got proxies that are more than willing to fight each other, that can and are fighting each other, that can easily drag any one of these three main countries into conflict with each other there. It's a real mess.
I mean, we've been talking for years about even, you know, the CIA-backed groups and the Pentagon-backed groups shooting at each other. So, you know, we've seen the Turks shoot down Russian planes. We've seen all kinds of crazy stuff go on. And, you know, if you look at a map of the Ottoman Empire, 1914, say, going into World War One, you know, there is no Syria or Iraq. There are these provinces, Syria and Mesopotamia, and pretty amorphous borders. And then Arabia and Palestine. No Lebanon, no Israel, none of that stuff. Now, you know, we have what's called, you know, what everyone's been calling a neo-Ottoman in Erdogan. And this is the Ottoman Empire. I'm wondering if this is the way he still views the real estate there. And, you know, that those borders, we know he went in and out of Iraq as if he owned it. And is, are we going to be seeing this, you know, expanding further into Syria and maybe right up to the Saudi border? And that also Ottoman ran down along the Red Sea and the mountains there, almost all the way down to, you know, to the southern opening. What do you think?
There's all kinds of potential. I'm not so worried about the conflict moving quite so far south yet,
right,
to the Syrian border. I'm more worried about deconfliction between the U.S., the Russians, and the Turks. Again, this three-way standoff is still going on, and with their proxies all fighting amongst each other.
Right.
It's the potential for misunderstanding, miscommunication is a lot. I want to quick draw everyone's attention to two articles if you want to keep an eye on what's going on. The National Interest has an article out in the last few days by Matthew Petty. It's U.S.-led coalition blocks Russia in Syria while allowing Turkey to terrorize the Kurds. And the other one is probably the best thing in English to be reading right now on Syria is Al Monitor, al-monitor.com. And the article, this one in particular I'm looking at, is by an American, Jack Detch. And it's National Security Officials Fear White House Reversal on Syria.
Mm.
And this is how the deep state, the Pentagon, you know, the however you want to call it, you want to call it the deep state, you want to call it the blob, you want to call it the unelected officials in the military, the security services, and so on. But they're afraid that Trump will reverse on his reversal and announce that he wants U.S. troops out of Syria again.
Yeah.
For what is the fourth time now he would say this?
Yeah.
And they are scrambling to keep American military presence there. And the American military presence there is to deny this oil to the Syrian government so that it can't rebuild and reconstruct the country. They're hoping to get the regime change via economic blackmail that they couldn't get by jihadi proxy war.
Right.
And there's the neocons have this crazy idea that simply occupying geopolitical space in East Syria and keeping Syria destabilized somehow interferes with Iran's arc of influence,
right,
through Iraq, Iran, and into Lebanon. They talk about supply lines as if Iran wasn't getting weapons to Hezbollah
anyway
over the last two decades anyway.
That's right. So we're gonna have to stop here, Mark. We're out of time, but I'd like to pick it up here because there's also the Silk Road and all of those projects that I guess they think they're thwarting all of this. But we'll pick this up again next week, and thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.